Mr. Miller, our first attempt at doing a week in IndyCar news was quite popular, believe it or not. Actually, to my genuine surprise, because, I don't know, you and I talk about this stuff every day, and not new to us, but good to know that some folks seem to enjoy it so far. I've been keeping notes, a little notepad here on my desk, left side, since our first installment of the topics we've written about, the things that have happened in IndyCar. And, okay, got a couple good things. Pipo Derani, he's going to test for Schmidt. Hey, Butterball's back with Andretti. And then we have a big lawsuit, which kind of smashes everything else that I had on the list. Paul Genelozzi, Rocket Sports Racing, Champ Car, 2005, the firing of Ryan Hunter Ray. You were covering the series back then. Tell me about what you remember, about what went down. And any thoughts on the news today of Ryan Hunter Ray being awarded $3.3 million?
Well, it'll be the most popular story you've written in the history of the Racer website, and I've already got responses on my Facebook page. You can hear people cheering all over the country because Paul's not very popular and not very well liked. I just remember...
Allegedly.
No, he's allegedly not very well liked.
Okay.
That's a fact. We threatened to kill each other once before the start of a race. Well, they played the national anthem. It was one of my highlights of my career. I just remember Ryan Hunter Ray's, he was just, I think he'd never been, when you get to the top level, that you're never going to have to be treated like he allegedly was treated. Alex Tagliani experienced the same thing a year or two later when maybe earlier, I can't remember, they all run together, but when he was driving for Genelozzi. So, I guess what you always lawsuits and court trials and all, but to think that it's taken all this time to get some kind of a judgment is what amazes me, is how it can drag on.
And you also have, I think Enrique Bernoldi was someone else who got caught up in some sort of Rocket Sports related lawsuit in Champ Car in the final season there. So the idea of lawsuits taking place in and around this former Champ Car team, not a surprise, but I'm with you. Great to hear that it's been resolved. I know that Ryan Hunter Ray, who really didn't want to talk about it, and understandably so, you know, he's moved on. His career, just tanked after this happened, after he got fired with two races left in the 2005 season. You know, I've written about it many times. You've written about it. I mean, the guy was truly at the end of the line. I remember one story he told me a while back of sitting in the passenger seat of some sort of, you know, high speed passenger car, road car, in one of the kind of experiential ride and drive things. And, just sitting there thinking like, man, I was driving an Indy car, you know, a year ago, and here I am at some, you know, forgettable track in the passenger seat trying to instruct I don't know what the guy was, a banker or a software engineer, how to drive his Porsche or Ferrari or whatever it is. And just thinking like, man, things have really changed in my world, and not necessarily for the better. So at least in the time it took to pour through 80 to 100 pages of all the legal documents and putting the story together, which you can read on racer.com, there are some fairly questionable things that took place during that 10 or 11 year span where this lawsuit happened to drag out. So again, you can read the full everything about it, not just the news story, but the in-depth piece about it on Racer. So I won't rehash all that here, but you can understand why someone like Ryan, who's never really been accused of being a bad guy, right? I mean, unless you've heard about it, he's generally referenced as one of the more upstanding guys in the paddock. It's good to hear that he's been taken care of.
If he indeed does get taken care of, it's one thing to win a suit, I guess. It's another thing to actually get paid. But, you know, think about where he came from. I remember doing a story on him once, and maybe it might have been the summer of 2006. He was testing a truck for Robbie Gordon when Robbie Gordon had a truck. He might have tested a Busch car. And to think he came, not only did he come back, make this amazing comeback and get a full-time ride, he became a champion and Indy 500 winner. So, you know, a lot of it's his perseverance and the fact that he never gave up, which, I mean, he really and truly is one of the great stories of just hanging in there and believing in yourself.
The first I got wind of all this, not the lawsuit, but the conclusion of the lawsuit in terms of monies trying to be handed back to Hunter Ray's company, Ryan Racing, was actually on Monday. And it's one of the things, Robin, you worked in IndyCar before I was born. But, you know, you worked
I know.
You worked in the sport, and obviously you make lifelong friends, whether they're mechanics, they've gone on to own teams and done the same thing here, and you start to hear from some sources like, hey, a buddy of mine that works over there said, you know, the feds just showed up and hauled off this and that and the other thing. You go, really? Interesting. So, again, not that you cheer lawsuits. In our sport, it's small enough to where it's never a good thing, even for the guy that wins the money or the woman that, you know, gets the award. It's never a good thing, but hopefully this does come to a quick conclusion and folks can move forward from there. Speaking of moving forward, next week we've got IndyCar, a whole bunch of teams heading to Sebring, the short course there for a test. And we learned two fun things. We're going to have young Brazilian race car driver Pipo Derani, kid that has definitely shown great potential in prototypes, who's going to get a run in the second Schmidt-Peterson car. And then we also learned that our boy, Mr. Hinchcliffe, is going to be trading cars with his buddy, Robert Wickens, who you got to see race a lot and come up the Champ Car open wheel ladder before Hinch heads over to Italy to test Wickens' DTM car. So I know you're not a big sports car nerd like me, but you've certainly read about Derani and had me tell you that this kid seems like he's something special. What do you think about Sam giving him a shot? Could that lead? Do you think that could lead to something if all the money we hear that may or may not be coming in with the mad Russian may or may not happen? And what about Hinch's ride swapping with Wickens?
Well, I always thought, I just remember being so impressed with Wickens in Formula Atlantic and thinking, how can somebody not snap this kid up? We had Carpani and Tagliani, and they were starting to, you know, Champ Car was hanging in there, but, and Tracy obviously was the champ in 2003, but this Robert Wickens was such a talent, and he went to open wheel in Europe and did really well. And I was just dazzled that no one ever gave this guy a shot, because he's a hell of a racer. I just remember watching him in Atlantics, thinking when he was, you know, just a kid, how mature he was in a race car. And then I tried to follow him, you know, when he went to Europe and had success over there. And you're thinking, well, maybe he'll end up in Formula One, but obviously DTM pays the bills and it's probably a good drive, but I hope they have a stopwatch on him, because I guarantee he'll be impressive.
What about our boy, young kid, Mr. Derani, and any of the questions about whether he's just going to be there for fun or whether, you know, the need to put some more money on that number 7 Schmidt car, maybe through Patron, which sponsors, actually the person who is the CEO of Patron Tequila, is one of the co-owners of the sports car team that Derani drives for. Do you think there's anything there, or do you think that's smoke and mirrors?
Well, it's pretty late. We're a couple weeks away from the season opener. It's kind of an unusual time to test somebody, isn't it? So you almost have to think maybe there's more to it than just, hey, let's just see how this guy's doing. I mean, it could be Sam's backup plan or his plan B or C or whatever it is in case something happens to our boy Lotion.
You spent a good portion of the day yesterday with Ricardo Juncos, who not only is he IndyCar's newest team owner, and I think also IndyCar's youngest team owner, but he's also just one heck of a story. Great guy from Argentina, but great guy, heck of a story, who's worked, you know, has worked his way up to become an IndyCar owner from nothing. Tell me about some of your time spent with him. I know you really enjoyed getting to know him a little bit.
When you get to Steve Shunk went and shot our video for us for Racer, and we pulled up and we were like, oh my God, look at this shop. And so he gave us a nice tour for 45 minutes or something, and I was just thinking, here's a guy that had absolutely no money when he came to Miami. He said he was in the hole, actually. You know how you always hear the story of the guy who said, I came to the United States with $15. He goes, oh, I didn't have that much. and he was a mechanic on a go-kart, and he didn't get paid. And then he got paid. And then he started, then he got a break. And then he asked the guy for a loan, and he paid him back. And the stories, the sequence of his career that he went through, it's amazing. You talk about perseverance and somebody that wants to make it. That's why he's such a good story. And that's why he's 41 years old, and he's been in this business for all these time. He said he thought maybe he had a chance to be a driver at one time, and then that didn't pan out. So he's exactly what IndyCar needs, and you know that, Marshall. You've written about the guy. I mean, him and Velarde and of course Trevor Carlin. That's the future of IndyCar. Those three guys right there. And I'm you know, I give Jay Fry props because I mean he recognized that whatever they got to do to help Juncos get going, they did it, and they're doing it. And Cal Coben, you know, he got a hell of a deal. He wouldn't tell me how much he paid, but he got three race cars and a bunch of spares and a couple of haulers for a really good price. So that helps him too, because he said, you know, I just couldn't have started an IndyCar team from scratch. I couldn't do that. He goes, this was by far the best way I had to get involved. And he goes, Kevin really treated me fairly.
And if you look at the photos of those cars as they were picked up and wheeled into the Junco shop, hard to ignore the fact that they came with Chevy Super Speedway aero kits, knowing that Ricardo's looking to launch the team with two cars at the Indy 500. So although they have not announced which engine manufacturer they'll work with, let's just say Honda might be quite surprised if they get the call, knowing that the cars already have Chevy bodywork on them.
Honda's already got 15 cars, so I think it's pretty safe to say they'll be a Chevy. It'll be interesting. He said, ideal situation, veteran and rookie, you know, if Kyle Kaiser is one of the drivers. And, you know, we can think of some people. I mean, Ryan Briscoe is the guy that came to mind that would be a really good choice for him, because you got to have somebody to help school Kaiser, and you got to have somebody that helps get the team going. I mean, he's got a couple KV mechanics who are working for him right now, and he's trying to hire some old KV mechanics. So I think, you know, he's got the right idea. He's like, hey, look, we know a lot about Indy Lights, but we don't know anything about Indy cars, so we need help.
Also heard there might be another Indy car on the premise with that's owned by a recent, I don't know if you want to call him former, but somewhat recent IndyCar team owner. Were you able to scope that out at all while you were there? And you think
no, I couldn't get all the way back there to see. And there's a lot of equipment in that place. And there's a lot of stuff going on.
That is something we will hold off on putting too much. Won't drill down on that too much right now, but that's something that I know that you have been pursuing, whether there could be an alliance between Ricardo and one other team owner for the 500. So we had your story, Robin, which some folks might have thought like, all right, that's a little bit out of left field, but you spoke with Cal Coben about IndyCar and Long Beach and that being a secure and positive relationship. That obviously comes not too long ago, just a couple years ago, where looked like one Bernard Ecclestone from Formula One was trying to unplug IndyCar from its second biggest venue after the Indy 500. What did Cal Coben tell you about that? And do you think we'll be safe showing up for the next couple of years?
I just had so many letters in the last 3 or 4 weeks, the mailbag people just saying, hey, you know, the new owners of Formula One said they're coming to the United States. They want some races in big cities, and LA's one of them. We're worried that they're going to come in and sweep in and take Long Beach. And, you know, a couple years ago, Pook was kind of acting like, you know, he was kind of floating a rumor that maybe Bernie was coming back to Long Beach. But when you look at what Cal Coben made a couple good points. When you look at, first of all, the paddock's not even close to being big enough for Formula One and what they bring with their TV and their teams and everything they bring technically. For the city of Long Beach to accommodate Formula One, they'd have to spend millions and millions and millions of dollars, and that doesn't count the sanctioning fee, which is 25 to 40 million, something like that. And to me, the most common sense thing is you can't put too many more people than they had in for the IndyCar race last year. So, and they're going to charge five times more to get in. So how many people would show up? And it's not like Formula One was the draw in the United States in the 70s when Mario was racing and Lauda and Schechter and Villeneuve. I mean, it's just lost a lot of its luster, I think. So I think, you know, the contract's through 2018, and Cal Coben said, I can't see us making any other decision but to stay with IndyCar. He goes, I think their future's pretty safe here.
We're looking at a couple of other final items for our look back and week in IndyCar news. So, Robin, we also found out that Ricky Taylor, young American kid who you've been fond of for a long time and definitely have followed and covered for a while in sports car racing, he came up the open wheel ladder very briefly before moving over to sports cars, but he got his first run in an IndyCar today with Team Penske in the Champs car. They didn't just throw him in one of the old buckets. They put him in Pagano's cart, Miami Homestead, and he was apparently quick like a bunny. What do you think about it? You think that kid belongs in IndyCar, and what'd you hear about the test?
We know Wayne Taylor pretty well, and he always was talking about having an IndyCar team. He said he wanted his kids to run open wheel someday. He was so connected to the IndyCar community that you just thought it was just a matter of time that he might be the first guy to make that leap of faith and come to IndyCar racing. But I would think, good as you know Ricky is, and you know he's one of, there's not too many things left in sports car racing, and he's just a kid and he's won just about everything. So I would think it'd be great. You know, I heard through the grapevine that it wasn't necessarily I think the IndyCar release said it was a Chevrolet deal, but I heard it was a Penske burned a rookie day, and that this was a full-blown deal that he was out standing on. I mean, he was, not only did he run Pagano's car, he ran it hard, and like you said, turned in some good time. So he's exactly it. He's another kid that should be in IndyCar, no doubt about it.
I agree. No, I disagree. Well, I don't know what I agree on. I love the kid in sports cars. We always love to see young American talent coming up in IndyCar, and we always want more, just to know that the future is secure when some of the old farts like Kanaan and Castroneves hang up their helmets. But granted, that's another 20 years from now. But yeah, I mean, granted, love to see more young American open-wheel talent at the top, but at the same time, it's also not a bad thing to have them in sports cars. Granted, there's another really good Taylor in Jordan, his brother, who 2 years younger and is also, you know, not only a champion, but also pretty kick butt there too. So, yeah, I'm with you. I mean, if we, you and I should give Wayne a call and see, you know, look, man, if you got to sacrifice a son, it's okay to sacrifice Ricky to IndyCar. I think that'll help. Think about that, you know, a Taylor brother kicking butt in IndyCar and another one kicking butt in sports cars. That wouldn't be a bad thing. Andretti announced today that Butterball is back as a sponsor, and while that didn't exactly warrant a big standalone story, although I know you love writing about chicken, is that a guarantee we're going to have more, oh my god, you're kidding me, commercials filled with bad puns by Michael and our boy Hunter Ray?
If it pays the bills, who cares? It's fine. Yeah, sure, we don't care. Are they big enough to do that? Will they spend that kind of money, do you think?
Well, the ones that we had last year, you know, were they definitely messed with my indigestion, but you know, hopefully they'll continue doing that. And not like we're trying to turn this into the all Ryan Hunter Ray / Andretti Week in IndyCar News, but between the commercials that we've seen Hunter Ray do with AutoNation, and also the Butterball ones done by Andretti and Michael, you and I grew up at a time where IndyCar commercials on the television were not a rarity from sponsors and manufacturers. Today, bit of a rarity. So being able to say that, you know, at least one entry in the paddock, one specific car, has a couple of sponsors that have been paying and, you know, are serious about promoting their involvement with IndyCar racing, I love it. Again, you know, I hate to admit that I don't know if we've ever purchased a Butterball chicken, but at least the fact that they're trying to get others to do it, it's a good thing. Give them some love.
Yeah. Well, think about the last real national TV commercial about a driver might have been Charlie Kimball a couple years ago.
Yeah, good old Chuck. Good old Charlie
Murphy.
It's
been a while. So, you know, the days of Target and Honda and Zanardi and Vassar and Montoya and all the, you know, before that, A.J. Foyt and Mario and Nigel Mansell with Texaco and Valvoline, also known as Valvoline. It's, you know, that's exactly what you got to have. I mean, I know Indy had a commercial during the Super Bowl. It was only shown in some parts of Ohio and Indiana, but they need one of those national TV spots to really showcase the driver's personalities like NASCAR does, because that's what this series is. It's got a lot of good personalities that people don't know about.
All right, let's wrap up here for the week. We'll get into this a little bit later. I'll be writing about this sometime soon, but there's movement with one auto manufacturer that definitely different than the one you and I spoke about most recently, Robin, privately. Sorry, folks, we're talking about stuff we can't really talk about, but there's movement with another auto manufacturer that seems to be perfect for IndyCar, so we'll get into that in hopefully the next week to 2 weeks ahead. Did see one thing, which was a little bit sad, and it's not maybe directly related to IndyCar today, but If you look back at the 2015 Indy 500, Simon Pagenaud's sponsor for the race was the telecommunications company Avaya. They just filed for bankruptcy, so not as if their association with Penske had anything to do with it, but sad to see that a recent primary sponsor in the series has gone belly up. All right, so we need to come up with something that isn't depressing to end with. Hey, you're a big fan of NASCAR and the Daytona 500. Who's your pick for the big race on Sunday, Miller? I know you are going to be glued in to all 200 laps. And you're going to be betting, too.
Like NASCAR thinks.
You're going to be betting,
too. Who hasn't won in a while? What's the best story? Junior coming back from his concussion and winning. That's their number one. That would be their number one story. What's the second biggest story? What's the second biggest story they could have? Maybe
Danica stopping
maybe
and getting her fillies
done. Ford winning a race. Ford hadn't won in over a decade. Ford needs to, they need to throw Ford a bone, maybe.
What about Trevor?
I don't know.
What about Trevor
I'm
Bayne?
I'm picking Clint Bowyer because he'll be about 40-1 and nobody's going to pick him.
Ooh, I like that. Well, there you go, friends. Although Trevor Bayne won, I think, in 2011 in a Ford, which isn't quite a decade, but that's okay.
Wasn't a Ford in 2011? Good call, brother.
It was a Wood Brothers. I know, and I'm supposed to not care about NASCAR. See, my little peculiar brain works in mysterious ways. All right, well, call me if you need bail or if someone's there to break your knees to collect on your NASCAR debt. Other than that, hopefully that was a somewhat amusing second installment of the Week in IndyCar News. And thanks for all the really cool feedback between Facebook, Twitter, and wherever else. Even got a couple texts from folks saying, hey, keep doing it. We like it. So hopefully we didn't change your minds this week. And if you do like it, let us know some more. Robin and I are both on Facebook. Robin is not on Twitter. That is probably the most requested thing. Tell Miller to get on Twitter.
Never going to happen, brother. I've lost enough jobs. Don't need to lose any more.
I was going
to
say, you've run out of options. So that is the reason Robin isn't on Twitter. But nonetheless, thanks for listening. And we will be back next week.